going on, and people can check on it. There is some kind of, there would be some kind of publicly accessible site where you can go and track the progress. Thank you.
Yeah. So the PAC definitely has plenty of meetings coming up in the next weeks. The next meeting of the full commission, where they will be speaking with the Police Review Board and Commissioner Dan Ryan, is on June 30th, so you don't want to miss that one. And then following that, they have a couple more meetings scheduled with agendas not yet posted. You can find out more information, if you're curious, on their website, which is, what's the full address? That's www.portland.gov/police-accountability. You can sign up for alerts there and go to their copious amounts of meetings.
And that's it for our show tonight. We will be back on the 26th of July. That's the fourth Tuesday of every month, folks. 5:30 right here on KBOO Portland, your community radio station, right after the KBOO Evening News. I'm Sam.
And I'm Jasmine. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Some gravy in your ear. This is Wavy Gravy, Temple of Accumulated Error and Voice of Woodstock, telling you you are listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM. The 90s are the 60s, standing on your head. Yow!
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're talking with Susan Larson, the founder of Susan Plays. Susan, welcome to Transpositive.
Thank you, Emma. Nice to be here with you.
Yeah, it's very nice to talk with you as well. So you're the founder of Susan's Place. That's one of the oldest sites online in the trans femme community for people seeking support, guidance, and information about transition. And I was just wondering if we could sort of start by talking about Susan's Place. I'd really love to kind of go deep into its history, because it goes way back to, like, I can't remember, does it go back to the 80s or the 90s? But
1995 was when Susan's Place was founded. Originally, when I first got online, I was over at Cindy Martin's TG Forum, and Cindy and Jamie's, and I was an active member there, and then their ISP told them that they couldn't continue to run their web-based chat because it was using too much bandwidth, and so they told them they had to take it down. Well, I offered to host, because I had some access to some bandwidth, the chat, for a period of time until they were able to get their problems with their ISP fixed. And it ended up being like a year or two later before they contacted me back and said that, they were ready to take it over again. And, in that time, the site had grown tremendously. It had changed. It wasn't the same community that, was there when it started. And so, for one time in my life, I broke my word, and I didn't take down Susan's Place at the time, because as I said, it was just, it wasn't the same site or even chat that I started out with after all that time. I originally started out with a message board and a simple web-based form chat. You would type in a box and hit the submit button, and you'd hit the submit button again to refresh it, and users would have to do that over and over and over and over again. There was no auto refresh back in those days. This was early in the internet technology. Transferred from a subdomain off of the existing website that we had in 1995, early 1996. I got the susans.org domain, and it's been run there ever since. I've owned and operated it since the beginning, and I've tried to make it a place that all transgender people, family, people who love us would find a comfortable home. And we've done our best to run the website in a professional manner where the roles are equally and fairly applied. Of course, during that time, some people would run afoul of the rules and wouldn't fix whatever it was that they were doing, and ended up getting banned off the site. So occasionally you'll hear from some of those type of people, and I'm sure that may be the case with this interview. When I did a interview with the Advocate magazine, a few of them popped up over there, and I just I let people say what they want to say. You're not going to change minds, but I think that the record that Susan's Place has is clear.
Mm-hmm. It must be very interesting to have been at the beginning. I mean, you were really at the beginning of the transgender presence online. I mean, there wasn't. What was the internet world like in 1995 when Susan's Place started?
It was a much smaller world than it is now. Some of the technologies and websites, this was even before GeoCities, I believe, although don't quote me on that. There was, actually started, my, transgender journey, before the internet, back in the, BBS days, FidoNet and tag BBSs and things like that. And, I would, as a teenager would call up these long distance bulletin boards ostensibly to get material for a non transgender bulletin board that I was running, but in reality I was chasing little hints and tips and everything of about places that I could go to find out about people like myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's where I guess where I'm going with the conversation initially is that even today, for many transgender and non-binary folks, the online world is where they start their journey. I mean, it's where a lot of us start our journey because it's a safe place. It's some place where you can actually find information, where you can test the, you know, veracity of truth that you may or may not know about yourself, where you can, you know, where you can find other people who have similar experiences, where you can be comforted and can, you know, consult and get guidance, can get peer support, just even just finding the most basic information. I mean, it's so fundamental to being able to, you know, genuinely transition, just to have the right information. And so at a time when there wasn't any information, Susan's Place was one of the few places in the world where trans women could go to get that information. How does that feel to be, you know, such a, I mean, such a pioneer in this area?
Well, I had a grandmother contact me, local community, not too long ago, and she asked me to come and speak to her about trans issues. You know, they had a family member who, you know, announced they were transgender and that they wanted to transition and everything, and they had gotten into some of the less trans-friendly places on the internet, you know, that trans parents tend to find the way to when they first start out. And, you know, when I was there, I was spending almost half of the conversation was, you know, listening to her try to convince me that this was a rapid onset type thing, you know, that they had no clue that their child was trans. And, you know, I explained, you know, how, you know, trans kids come out, how, you know, they will keep it to themselves until they feel that they can't hide it anymore. And that, you know, by the time I got done, basically, the family still wasn't 100% accepting, but they were considering the information that I gave them. And just a few weeks ago, I had sent a link to this grandparent, and she sent me back this wonderful message about how good that the trans child was doing, and they were assigned female at birth, and that how he was you know, presenting on LGBT issues in college, and you know, how the mother, who at the time, you know, I did the talk with the grandmother, wasn't trans affirming, had become trans affirming, and she was, you know, progressing on her journey to providing help. And she thanked me and talked about how the website, you know, helped so many people and so on. And, you know, I simply said it was a joy to serve. And that is, you know, how I see it. You know, I'm doing a service to the trans community, one that I started, you know, to help myself, but one that rapidly grew to the point where it was more about helping others than about helping myself.
Let's talk a little bit about your trans journey, because I'm sure that in many ways your trans journey parallels the trans journey of Susan's Place. Can you share with us your trans journey, maybe beginning from like when you first kind of were aware that you were transgender?
Well, you know, one thing that a lot of people, you know, well, trans people know, but, you know, cisgender people don't, is that most people form their self-image of their gender identity when they're between 2 and 4 years old. You know, they know they're a boy, they know they're a girl, they know that they're not a boy or not a girl. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I first, you know, felt that, you know, something was not right, that I wasn't being, you know, treated like I saw other people who were like me being treated. And that, you know, sense of wrongness started, you know, me being transgendered. It continued through about age 7, I think, was when I first learned that there was something called transgender, and that there was other people like myself that something could be done about being transgender. And that was when I decided that, you know, transitioning my gender fully, you know, was something that I wanted to do. at teenage years, you know, I was cross-dressing and things like that when I was able to. And, you know, there was more than a few times as a young child and a teenager that I had been caught by my parents. There was a situation I was, 17, 18 years old, working on a, at the time it was an excursion paddle wheel riverboat. And I was a night watchman on there, and I had this little cubbyhole where I basically slept at night. One of my coworkers had went down in there, and they found some women's clothing mixed in with my clothing. And I didn't know that they were going to go down there. Well, they started teasing me about it, and I went. Got very upset about it. My mom had come down to the boat that day, and she, they were teasing me in front of her about it. And I ran off, was ready to quit, thought the world was ending, all that sort of stuff that you do when, feel that you've been outed. And I later found out that they thought that I had had a girl up in up with me, and that they didn't think that it was gender related. They thought it was me having somebody up there to be intimate with. I went from there into the Navy. There's a whole story about the Navy and some details I won't talk about, but I got caught dressed one time while I was in the Navy, and that did not end well. I blamed a CIS gender woman who told me that if I would go into the woods, put on the clothes that I found there, that she would come in and, we would be intimate together. And that was a story I told the shore patrol as I was standing in front of them in a blouse and skirt while I was active duty military. And of course, this was in the time, I think it was still before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, so there wasn't any, wink, wink, nod, nod. It was, if you got caught that way, then you didn't have a Navy career. I ended up getting put out of the Navy, pattern of misconduct, discharge. So, it wasn't a dishonorable, but it wasn't honorable discharge either, and that's one of the things I've requested my records because I want to file an appeal to try to reverse that discharge and hopefully get some of the benefits that I've been entitled to as somebody who served in the military. And I got my fingers crossed, but if it doesn't happen, it's not that big of a deal. And I'm mentioning all these things for a reason, and I'll get into those in a few minutes. But so I got out of the Navy. I came back to Tennessee, which is where I founded Susan's Place, and I was working at a local computer store, and I was helping them, building and repairing computers, and something that I'm quite good at. A lot of you'll find a lot of trans people seem to have a propensity towards information technologies and all of that. And I was working at Susan at the computer store, and I was running Susan's Place. This was after I had taken over the chat from Jamie Fenton and Cindy Martin. And I was afraid that they would find the chat on the server. And I wanted to be the one to tell them rather than them finding it by accident. So one night I write this big long letter, and I leave it for the owner on his computer keyboard, and he would come pick me up and take me to work every day. And so I'd left this on his keyboard, and we'd get in the car, and I'm talking to him, and I basically in the letter said that if this was going to change how things were between me and him, the friendship that we had, that for him just not to come pick me up. And he did come pick me up, and I started talking to him about it, and then find out he hadn't even read the letter yet. So that was a lot of fun. He took it well. He basically did it as I think his exact words at the time, he laughed it off as it was okay because there was more room in the gene pool for him. we continued working together for quite a few years, while I was working for him, you know, he was also letting me have space on his server for Susan's Place. That was the second time I had come out. The first time was on that excursion boat a few months after the incident with the women's clothing. One of my coworkers got me drunk one night and basically hounded me until I, you know, came out. And when a trans person comes out, the way I described it back then, you know, and it's still pretty accurate, is that before you tell somebody, it's like you have a bowling ball in your belly, and then when you tell them, and you know, if they accept you, that it's like a rocket to the moon. You know, it's gender euphoria is the term that a lot of people are using for it nowadays.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a real thing, you know. And you know, there's a lot of benefit from coming out, being yourself and everything. At the time I did come out, I was out in public in the 90s for a year or so. There was a murder on the local army base that where a soldier that was dating a trans woman basically had their head beaten in by their fellow soldiers.
Yeah, and I remember that.
Yeah, that was the Calpurnia Adams story, basically. And so, you know, between that and there was a local LGBT person in the city that I'm in who was found dead, and the police said it was suicide, but it wasn't. And so between those two things, it drove me to detransition for quite a few years, actually. Clarksville did their first Pride celebration. I forget which year it was, but you know, the local Pride group brought Calpurnia Adams and Michael Reagan, I think, to Clarksville. And you know, we actually did have a really nice little Pride festival, and you know, unfortunately, because of the expenses involved and them not being able to pay the bills, it ended up folding. So you know, it there hasn't been another one in Clarksville, and that's something that I would love to see changed. Also, I would like to see a LGBT center here in Clarksville, and it's something I'm, you know, kind of pushing a little bit at the local government to see if they can, you know, help with it. You know, and you know, we're in talks. That's all I could say on that. You know, you know what type of, you know, community Middle Tennessee can be for LGBT people, especially back in the 90s. And so, yeah, I went back in the closet, and I stayed in the closet until 2014, like the end of 2014, beginning of 2015. During that entire time, I was still, you know, running Susan's Place, and I was still transgender. But you know, unless it was a close family or friend, you know, in the local community, I didn't tell anybody. And you know, one of the
it's kind of like it was kind of like you were like this like superhero. I'm serious. I mean, that's how I see it, because it's like I mean from like about 2003, I'd say, until like the mid 2010s, like I mean every trans person I know at some point or another went to Susan's Place. I mean, they went to Susan's Place because it was that weird kind of time in the online world where, like, you know, Facebook hadn't quite started yet. I mean, people were just beginning to really make social media a regular practice of their lives. And it was still like, it was that weird in between phase. And you know, when you were looking for stuff, when you're doing like a worldwide web search, Susan's Place always came up. And I mean, everybody that I know, they went to Susan's Place to like find information. And, you know, you were running Susan's Place from like this, you know, from your home in the South, you know, a very conservative state on the whole.
Yes.
And nobody knew about it except for a few people. And it's this site that was literally used by hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, how does that feel to like be the person? Do you feel like you're a superhero?
No, but I see, you know, a lot of what happened to me and, you know, in my early life, you know, I'm kind of a big believer in karma, you know, and, you know, we'll get into that in more detail in a little bit if you want to, but, sure. You know, the, you know, I see the bad things that happened during my early life as kind of steering me to get to the point where I could run Susan's Place, you know, because, you know, let's say I stayed in the Navy, you know, which I had full intentions of doing at the time, you know, I stayed in the Navy and I got, you know, had a career. Yeah, obviously I may have not, you know, been willing to give all that up to start a trans website to help a lot of people. You know, if I had gone to college, gotten great jobs, you know, and, you know, had a lot of money, you know, comfort and privilege, you know, I might have not wanted to, you know, to risk all of that in by running a transgender website. And, you know, then, you know, there was, I got fired from a job one time, you know, and so on and so on. You know, but there's a whole series of little things that, you know, when I finally did get to transition, I look back and I realized that those were like steering points that sent me in the direction that I needed to go. And, you know, the karma point, you know, we'll get to when I start talking about, you know, what happened in 2015 and 2017 became, you know, what, you know, as you said, you know, one of the world's largest transgender support websites. You know, we had, you know, millions of visits a year, you know, something like on the neighborhood of 30 million visits over the course of, you know, several years. But, you know, we were doing hundreds of thousands of visits a month, and still do. The you know, the website, you know, it needs a new look and, you know, some updating, and I have some ideas for that. But you know, funding is always an issue, you know, on getting some of that stuff done. I'm not a graphics designer, so, you know, having, you know, things like that, you know, cost money, and, you know, that is a challenge, you know, and especially in the COVID and the rising inflation time that we're in now. The website, you know, from 1995 to 2014 did not accept donations, and it did not accept have any means for members to support the website. I paid, you know, all of the expenses either out of my pocket or, you know, in reduced pay from, you know, the computer guy that I was working with. You know, I was doing, you know, work that, you know, even starting, you know, salaries was, you know, in the neighborhood of $50,000-$60,000 a year, and, you know, I'm barely scraping by on $20,000-$30,000, you know. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I've put a lot of sacrifice into what I do. In 2014, you know, I ended up separating from the guy that I had worked with all those years. It wasn't a good separation, you know. You know, at the time, I owned the servers that his, you know, was his websites and his business was running on. And, you know, I had, you know, given him, you know, the use of one of those in exchange for, you know, hosting, you know, and stuff for my website. And I had also started up a business that you knew, which was Clarksville Online. And,
you know, yeah, I remember Clarksville Online.
Clarksville Online, you know, was basically an online newspaper, and you know, it had you know, grown, you know, quite a bit larger than, you know, I'd expected it when I started it. And you know, it's actually a mainstream news outlet for the local community. And when we were parting company, the other gentleman did some acts in order to gain control of Clarks Online without, you know, buying it from me, you know, I'll put it that way. And it was not a good time. You know, there was a lot of stress and anguish on my part. And at one point I even started up a new domain for my website, you know, in case he shut it down, you know, because it was on, you know, servers that he had control over. So, you know, he had done some stuff where he basically transferred the domain to him. So I didn't have control over the domain, so he could have shut it down at any point. And for a month or so, I ran it on both the Susans.org website and on another domain, just in case it was taken down. Members during that time, you know, I started allowing people to donate or subscribe to the website. And a donation, you know, in our situation, was basically a subscription, I mean, is basically the same thing as what you do when you donate. You don't get anything for doing it. You just, you know, commit to doing a regular donation. And so, you know, we did that. You know, members really, you know, when this all went on with the website, you know, stepped up to help out. And that was the first time I'd received any, you know, major support for the website. And because, you know, I was in between jobs at the time and everything, I decided that I would do Susan's full time at that point. And members have, you know, helped support it ever since. I don't run any advertising on the website because, you know, there's extreme potential to accidentally be outed, you know, with all the trackers. I don't know if you've ever searched for something on the internet and then you've gone to stores and next thing you know, all of a sudden your internet thing is popping up ads for the things that for, even though you didn't search for it online or anything. And, you know, didn't want, you know, the same thing happening to my members where they were linked to, you know, being transgender or, you know, incorrect advertising that could potentially out them. So I've stayed away from advertising, and I'm not a big advertising fan, you know, to begin with. In 2000, I think it was 16, I'm still pre-op, still in the closet. And one of my members who used Susan's Place to navigate their own transition, called me up and we were talking, and they were talking about their upcoming transition and, you know, that they were going to be having the surgery soon and everything. And, you know, they kept me up to date while they were doing the research and everything. They told me that, and then, you know, they were like, and when I'm, you know, recovered from my transition, we're going to start planning yours. And they basically later told me that they were going to give me my bottom surgery. They said I could either go to the clinic that they went to and get it done there, or I can take what it would have cost there and, you know, go wherever I liked, you know. So I didn't have to do it there, but I had known that the amount of research that they put in, the fact that they were able to go anywhere in the world and have their surgery done and everything. And I'd seen the results of their surgery. So I, at that point, you know, decided that I would go to the same clinic. And, you know, I didn't, you know, just assume that it was going to happen, you know, because, yeah, you know, I've had people say that they were going to do things over the years that, you know, sometimes didn't happen. So I kind of held off until I actually heard back from the clinic, you know, that you know, we were actually scheduling and, you know, getting ready to establish a date and everything. Well, I'm still in the closet. I'm still with the dead name. I'm still with the dead, but, you know, sex on all my ID documents and everything. So I did another letter, my second big, you know, coming out letter. And on that one, it was not just to the local community, it was to the to my friends and family, it was to the local community. Yeah, I'd become fairly well known during the news website and everything, and Clarksville's kind of a small town, so I knew that as soon as it got announced, you know, about this, I was going to be outed throughout the entire community. And rather than letting other people tell my story, I did a letter, and I spent 4 days working on it, telling my story, which I released on Facebook. I went and filed the name change, and as soon as I got back home, I immediately posted the letter. Things went really, really well. I was kind of surprised. I expected a lot more heat. But of course, this was in the time before the trans moral panics that we have going on right now, you know, especially in the United States and especially in the Republican controlled states like Tennessee. I did my coming out letter. I had very few people that, you know, had any, you know, issues with it, at least, you know, in public. I had overwhelming support, which was amazing, you know, and something that I attribute to the local community having a university and an army base. So, you know, things were kept fresh, I guess you could say, would be one word. The community reacted well. I came out, I did my name change. My name change came back the same day, and one of the my lawyer told me it was the fastest name change that they had ever had in the county that he knew of. So I got the name change in. I immediately filed to change my birth certificate. You know, I was fortunately born in California, so I was able to update my birth certificate, and I got that done. I went to the local DMV, took my, you know, new birth certificate and everything. And, you know, this is Tennessee. I expected some flack when I tried to change my driver's license, but I didn't have any resistance at all. I remember sitting outside of the DMV, holding my new license, looking down at it and crying in the car. You know, just seeing that F on my first piece of official document. Actually, no, I did the driver's license first. After I did the name change, I did the driver's license, and then I did name change, and then I got my passport. And then once I got the F on my passport, which involved getting letters from doctors and everything, you know, that I'd undergone a gender transition, which I basically had undergone even before that point. But, yeah, we got to satisfy the government, you know how it is. I got my passport in, and I used that to update my gender marker on my driver's license with the state of Tennessee. And I kind of expected to have some flack changing it, but yeah, I guess because you know, the constitutional laws and everything like that, that they didn't give me any trouble changing my birth sex in the state of Tennessee. I changed my birth certificate with California, and that's been updated and has an F on it as well. You know, it's 2017. I went to Bangkok, Thailand to the Preacher Aesthetic Institute, and I had my bottom surgery. Shortly before I left, I sent them a letter. I talked about Susan's Place and, you know, some of the stuff that we did. And I basically asked them if they would consider swapping out some mention on you know, our newsletter that I did with Susan's Place at the time.
I remember that newsletter. Yeah.
I also gave them a banner on top of the page, I think, for a little while, and, you know, a whole slew of things. And, you know, basically, you know, they looked at, you know, what I sent them, and they basically told me that we would talk about it when I got to Thailand. So, you know, I was going anyway because so I was having my bottom surgery.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. You're basically like, when you started Susan's Place, we didn't really have a word for it back then, but nowadays we would call you an influencer.
I don't know if I would be on quite that level, but, you know, I made sure that, you know, they knew exactly what I was, you know, offering to do. I made sure that they knew that I would not do anything that compromised my website. And they agreed to that, you know, in writing. They knew exactly what I was offering, and they did, you know, that way there wasn't any misunderstandings or anything like that. You know, I learned with the situation with the ex-business partner about getting everything in writing. And I still have a copy of that signed agreement somewhere, where, you know, we basically listed it all out and everything. And it, you know, it wasn't anything unethical. I would not do anything unethical, you know, to save my own life. You know, I'm that firm on the morals and ethics. Yeah, I just would not do it. And they never asked. So I went to the Preacher Aesthetic Institute in Bangkok, and met a young man who was their clinic manager named Jesse Nawat. He's a wonderful gentleman. I also met Dr. Preacher and his son, and we sit down in an office in the clinic, and they basically tell me that, with the exception of, I think I wanted lipo and body sculpting and a nose job, with the accepting of those two things, and there was medical reasons why they wouldn't do the other stuff and that at the same time, that they would basically agree to the to do the entire wish list. And so I ended up having the bottom surgery, which was paid for by the supporter of the website, and then the clinic donated about $30,000 in facial feminization surgery to me, which was incredible gift. I did the surgery. I waited 30 days, just under 30 days before I posted any pictures online. I did one final picture, and then after that it was like, you're not getting to see until it's all healed up.
No zombie pictures.
I had them, and I posted them after that time, but I waited for the big reveal. When I did go into the surgery, I had a thumbs up picture of me going being wheeled out of the room. And I had a wrapped up in bandages. My entire head was encased in bandages and everything. And me giving a thumbs up almost immediately after I came out of the critical care unit. A young lady stayed at the hospital while I was having my surgery, and she took the picture as they brought me out. And that was so wonderful for her. And then I posted it on Facebook, or she posted on Facebook for me with a, it's a girl, little balloon, like it's a newborn. So I put that on. That's still on my Facebook. If you look at my life events, it's on there. So, I had that surgery. I came back, recovered. I love Thailand, by the way. If you ever get a chance to go, it's definitely worth going. The hospitals are top notch, and the surgeons there have so much experience. It's not even funny at what they do. And
the food's really good too.
Yes, I love the Thai food, and I still go crazy on it. I got one little place in Nashville, the Siam Cafe, that I love to go. And they have Thai, native food, so it's really good there. So I went to Bangkok. I stayed there for 2 weeks after the surgery, three weeks. And, so I got to recover, and I spent every day, after like about 4 days in the hospital, I got out. I took another 2 or 3 days to recover, just laying around and everything. And then after that, I walked constantly. And I went to the malls. I went, took a boat ride on the big river there, the Mekong. No, not Mekong. I forget the name of the river, but I did that. Came home, did a little meet and greet in Clarksville. Just opened on Facebook. Anybody who wanted to come down and meet, me could come down and do so. And I had a bunch of friends and all that who showed up. It was a fun event. I really enjoyed it. We did stories. Clarksville Now did stories on the transition. The website that I originally founded didn't do any stories, I didn't really expect it. Then I recovered for about 6 months and I went and had voice surgery. If I had to rate all of the surgeries on the level of, what they do for you, the bottom surgery, of course, for that sense that everything is right again. But I would say the voice surgery over facial feminization, because, having people not misgender you all the time is a blessing that you just can't understand the value of. And then, of course, the facial feminization surgery. But I... even though I, went before I was pre-transition, I thought I would never pass. I thought it was impossible, that there was no way in the world that I would ever be able to walk down the street and people not point and laugh at me, and yet when, I did do the transition, you start out kind of that way, but by the time you get to the end, even a little way into it, you'll find that people don't see anything. I have on top of my Twitter page, Susan Larson TN, with underscores in between each one of those. I have a picture that is, me totally pre-transition. It's me at early in my transition where I got, my makeup done, my hair done, and I went and did a speech at a local civic organization here in Clarksville, Tennessee, called Leadership Clarksville, on their Religion and Social Diversity Day. I came in and did a speech on on transgender topics, and so on. And so that was the second picture. The third picture was just me out enjoying a day, by the time you get to the third picture, you wouldn't have looked at that picture and thought, hey, that's somebody who was, somebody who would never pass as a woman. You would have thought it was a woman sitting there. And, even before I had the surgeries, I was, doing well enough to be able to pass. Something that, again, if just like 3 months before you told me that I would have called you a liar to your face. Then the facial feminization took the few little rough edges that I had and took them, smoothed them off. I had brow ridge surgery. I had forehead contouring. I had jawline contouring. And they did something when they did that I consider a blessing. They lipoed under the chin. And so I don't get any fat under the chin and never will. I had that done. I did the voice surgery. And, if you ask me today, I would say that my transition is complete. I was kind of glad that the clinic wouldn't do the nose when I asked for it, because, if I look back on it, it's my family nose. All the women in my family have this nose. And
your nose is adorable.
Well, I didn't see it that way. I always thought it was too big. But, when I looked at family pictures, my aunt, my mom, my sisters, all of them have this nose. So, I was kind of glad I didn't get anything done on that. So, since since I, you know, completed the surgeries, you know, I've done a few lectures. I've done a few news articles, you know, interviews, and everything. The Advocate did a big story when I came out of the closet. Oh my God! Yeah, you know, we talked about that earlier. There was a huge full page article in the local newspaper with a full page picture of my face on it on Easter Sunday, and I could swear that I could hear heads popping all over Clarksville when that came out. And then the following Monday it appeared in the Tennessean as well, but it wasn't full page and all of that. But I was they did it on the page across from the political section, so you know I thought that was an appropriate place. When Tennessee was debating the bathroom bill, the first one that they did, not the one that passed, I was introduced before the committee by our local state rep, who's now our mayor. He saw me there in the waiting room, and without me even knowing that he was going to do it, introduced me before the state legislature, which was, you know, an honor. I wish that, you know, they would have taken some of what they've heard that day and since then, and taken it to heart rather than continuing to engage in what LGBT and trans people in Tennessee call the slate of hate. Mm-hmm. Tennessee has passed the most anti-trans laws, I think, of any state in the nation, and I can't wait for these moral panics to end, but I really can't wait for the justice system to catch up with these unconstitutional laws and start knocking them down one at a time, like they did mm-hmm. with the transgender bathroom sign law that Tennessee tried to pass. And I've got my fingers crossed that the judicial system is going to, say no. But, if not, it may be time to look at places that I could look for political asylum.
Well, you're always welcome. You're always welcome out here in Oregon, Susan. Tennessee is a wonderful place too, though. I mean, it's a beautiful land, and it's an incredibly rich. There's a rich history in Tennessee of resistance. You know, yep. There's a rich history in Tennessee of resistance to white supremacy, of resistance to homophobia. You know, Tennessee has a very rich and multifaceted history, and people who aren't from the South don't know how much energy has gone into organizing in the South among women, among people of color, among queer people, to resist the righteous moralizing that sometimes gains ascendancy.
Well, we can hope, but unfortunately, if you look at the parallels to history, we're in the United States are basically paralleling what happened in Germany in the 1930s. And, I am so scared that this resurgent fascism that started up in this country is going to, go beyond, to the point that Germany went. You have a Supreme Court that basically decided that, there is no precedent, that they can ignore precedent at will, and that's a very scary thing. You have a stacked court, which I really think that we need to look at unstacking in this country, and adding more justices, non-Supreme Court justices, but there are I forget it's 13 judicial circuits. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. In reality, we should, look at expanding the court to at least 13 justices. People, need to wake up, they need to get out, and they need to vote, and they need to, continue to vote. If everybody who could vote did vote, we wouldn't be in the position that we are in today.
But we're not in a bad position either, though, are we? I mean, we're in this really amazing place.
We're at the edge, and we're still at the stage it could go either way. know, and you know that's why people need to you know become more politically engaged and politically active. You know, if you look at you know the language that's being used, you look at the you know the level that social media is you know normalizing hate. You know, it's scary. You know, and I'll be the first one to say it's really scary. You know, almost to the level of what drove me back into the closet in the 90s. Not that I'm going anywhere, but you know, it makes you worried. You know, when you see political candidates seriously talking about putting bullets into the head of trans and LGBT people. You know that that moves the Overton window, you know, to the point where more severe stuff becomes, you know, politically acceptable. You know, it may not move it to the point where, you know, executing, you know, people is acceptable, but at the same point, you know, it moves it a little bit along the way, and, you know, as more and more hate's normalized, you know, things can get really bad. And that's why, yeah, I would like people to pay attention. You know, and that, yeah, you know, that's all you can do. You know, read the news. You know, I do a trans and LGBT news feed on Twitter every day. Well, almost every day. And, you know, I post the good and the bad. And, you know, it's just a way to stay aware. You know, and that's very important. It's just to be aware of what's going on. And, you know, where you're able to, you know, and you're you know, come in and, you know, go out and protest, go out and, you know, talk to your elected officials and, you know, telling, you know, what people who don't know trans people, you know, we're scary, you know, but people who do know trans people, you know, wouldn't think of us as being scary, you know, and so get out there, tell your story, get out there and be active in your community, you know, and reach out to people, you know, both in the real world and online, you know, and I think that, you know, people can make a difference.
Yeah. Well, Susan, we're getting to the last few minutes of the show. If people want to find out more about Susan's Place, where can they go to find out about Susan's Place?
Well, Susan's Place is on the web at susans.org, SUSANS.org. It is a peer support for people, whether they're trans femme, trans mask, non-binary, or gender questioning, or, you know, you just want to, you know, be somebody who stands up and, you know, helps the trans community. You know, you can come there and educate yourself. You can talk to people on the forums or in the Discord chat, and you know, just you know, be there, be an ally.
And if people want to follow you, is there any place you'd recommend if people want to follow you, like on Twitter or
I'm on the best place to follow me for trans issues is Twitter by far. I don't talk about trans stuff super often on Facebook. I find Twitter's more suited to my personality, I guess you could say. So, you know, you'll find me on Twitter at Susan_Larson_TN. And I'm sure Emma can direct anybody there who needs to find it. But, you know, I go through each and every day and I compile, it averages about 60 stories a day. You know, I always start out the feed with, you know, violence against the trans and LGBT community. Then I move into U.S. news. I then do the international news that I find. I cover pretty much every country in the world with that. If I see a story about something related to trans or LGBT issues in those countries, then I'll add them to the feed for the day. I then turn around and I do general interest trans news. So, you know, your health, your literature, your book reviews, your TV shows, you know, music, things like that, your culture, I guess you could say. And I do that almost every day. I do it definitely Monday through Friday, and I generally will take the weekends off. So, you know, you're welcome to join me there.
Great. Well, thank you so much. We've been talking tonight with Susan Larson, the founder of Susan's Place, one of the nation's oldest trans and non-binary support websites, active since 1995. Susan, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Trans Positive.
It's been my pleasure. And, you know, Emma, we in the trans community appreciate all that you do on Trans Positive. And we're glad that, you know, we have you out there as a voice for us in Oregon. And, you know, we really need positive voices. And thank you.
Thank you.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time.
But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the U.S.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.